Oh, my God. I guess it's my turn. I don't like sitting in this spot. Give me a yes if you can hear me. I don't want to be speaking in that. Give me a why. Give me a yes. Give me thank you. All right. My name is Marvin, and I am a grateful recovering nicotine addict. And it's good to be here tonight. It's good to be smover tonight. How's that? Can we have a moment of silence just to bring our higher powers in to, so I can take a second to bring my higher power in and just once again turn it over and let him work through me to say what he needs me to say and so that I may hear what I need to hear. And let me let go of this negative energy, isn't it? Or this anxiety, I guess, and that's okay. It's a part of living. Take a second. God, just be with me and to work through me, and let me be a vessel for you to use. You know, that's where my deepest glories come from, my true peace comes from, my serenity is trying to fulfill your will in my life, because when I try to do it on my own, I am in trouble, and I know where that takes me, and I hurt the people I love. And I don't want to do that anymore. So amen to that. Let's keep going on this. So what it is that I'm going to share a little bit of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, my experience, strength, and hope. And where I go with it, I'm not sure. I didn't make any plans, as I've shared a lot in other fellowships for a lot of years. And I've always, after the first time, I never made anything to go from after that. I just decided to turn it over, and whatever comes, comes. And, all right, let me just start. I was born in Akron, Ohio, and that's where I still live. I grew up in Stowe, which isn't too far from Akron. A bit more in the country. It's not in the city. And, I'm not sure if I want to share all my childhood. A little bit. It was a little bit crazy in my household. It looked really good from the outside looking in. My family, my father was a lawyer, pretty successful. He had his own firm downtown with three or four other attorneys, and so we were well off financially. I'm one of five, and I'm the youngest, and my oldest is 19 years older than me. The next oldest is 6 years away, and they were twin sisters. And then I have one other brother that's in between them two. I wasn't planned for, at least that's, nobody's ever told me that, but, it's just the way it played out. And my father was distant from me and, didn't spend a lot of time with me. He was doing what he wanted to do, that's the way it was. And he was there. I mean, he put a roof over my head. I was taken care of. I had the money I wanted. I ate well, you know, all that. My mom was overprotective of me from my father. And so that thing, I wasn't planned for. And my father didn't really want another child at that time. He wanted to do what he wanted to do, and he did that. And But, you know, I was there, and it wasn't perfect, but it was a heck of a lot better than a lot of families. So on the outside, looking in, it looked really good. But on the inside, it was pretty crazy. Neither my father or my mother really knew how to, or they didn't have a good relationship. And a lot of rage and anger was present, and they didn't talk things out or discuss or work through problems very well. It was more like it was cut and dry what my dad said, and that's the way it was. And I don't know what I need to say about that, other than the feelings of what I was felt like I wasn't enough, I didn't matter, I was never going to be good enough, you know, all those negative emotions. So it was emotional abuse more than anything, and all those feelings were what I grew up with, and that's what I felt about myself, and I still deal with that today. I have to fight those, because those are ingrained in me from my childhood, and it's like weeding those out, but the weeds aren't, I never get to the root of the, it always grows back if I don't keep it, put stuff on it to keep it dormant, you know, and the stuff I need to put on it to keep it dormant is working on myself and looking at myself and seeing what's going on in myself and looking at all my emotions as I'm going through them and trying to get to the roots of what's causing what I'm feeling when I'm feeling lonely or feeling angry and I get angry at something. Where is that all coming from? Is that from the way back when or is it from right now? And I need to, look through it and make sure what it's about, that I'm not overreacting to things. And it's hard to do in the present time that you're going through it, you know. It's like, okay, let me back off from what I'm feeling right now and take a look at it. And let me respond in the correct way, you know. And I'm not perfect with that, that's for sure. I got a lot of work to do there. Like I said, I'm a year smover and... this year I've been through a lot, that's for sure. I'm jumping way ahead, so let me finish off with my childhood so I can move on. But my two sisters, they were 6 years older than me, and they were like 5'8", and I'm like 5'7". But when I was, let's say 5, they were 11, and they were big, and fought a lot, and they argued, they'd pull each other's hair, and they'd, fight a lot, throw things, and argue, and scream, and fight, and I always felt scared. It was never, the house was never a, I guess I could get away to areas because the house was pretty big where I felt safe, but I'd have to be off by myself and alone and shut away, pretty much to feel safe. And it was hard to get attention from my mom and that. So that led to me acting out a lot and doing a lot of things to get attention. And so I got attention by doing things, negative things rather than, doing good in school and all that. I would, mess up and get in trouble and whatever. And, but I stole as a young person and lied, cheated, stole, whatever. And that, all that, kept things, exciting, and, so I was out for the excitement, the adrenaline rush, because I wasn't getting the love actually that I needed. My mom was there and gave me love the best that she could, but her love was attachment rather than love, if you know what I mean. Is she was protective, overly protective, which at that time I didn't realize it. You know, it took me a lot of years in recovery and then therapy to realize that that was really not love. It was really destructive more than anything. But she did the best that she could. I think my father did the best that he could too, given the circumstances. And I understand where he was and why he was the way he was. But he had a lot of obsessions too, and I can't call him that. He was an addict on anything, but you know, he acted out within the marriage with other people and stuff like that, which always, and my mom sort of knew it, but she didn't want to know it type thing. She had nowhere to go if he wasn't there, and she stayed within the relationship for that reason. And so it was dysfunctional and abusive. And then my dad died when I was 17, and that's when I went. I had tried cigarettes when I was like 9 and got caught, was hiding away and down in our basement thinking, oh, they won't catch me. But they smelled the smoke, and they come running down, what's burning? And they caught me smoking. And I didn't smoke after that, probably until I was 13. And I tried it again, and then I did a little bit maybe, but at 15 I was probably pretty much smoking all, you know, every day. I probably was not addicted at that time, and I had tried drinking, and I didn't like the taste of the drink. And so when my father died when I was 17 is really when I didn't know how to put up with or deal with the grief, the loss of him, the sudden change in my life, because he was the person who brought home the money. My mom was totally lost without him, and she went into a real depression. And I basically got involved in relationships with women, and I was involved in this one relationship, and I just transferred all my emotions onto her. And I was, her family took me in because my mom was incapable at the time because she was in depression, and I couldn't help her. I needed help, you know. And my girlfriend's parents who took me in, they were full blown addicts, alcoholics basically. And that was pretty crazy. But I think my mom was paying them a little bit to take care of me, really. So I stayed with them for probably 8 months. And in that relationship, it was crazy. It was because all my emotions went onto her, and I globbed onto her like my mom globbed onto me. And it was, she put me through hell, and I just kept coming back for more, you know. She would be with guys right in front of me, and I was like, you know, okay. And then I tried to make up, and I went through the worst brutal, I put myself through the worst brutal stuff that I could in that relationship. And I look back at that and say, what the hell was I doing? But I was just so emotionally distraught that I didn't know where else to go or what else to do, you know. And so that ended in a really bad way. And at the time I was doing this, is I'm talking right after my father passed away. I was in 18, 19, within that time, you know, in the last year and a half of my school. And I remember father died when I started 10th grade, we were sitting in the classroom, and there was a guy in my high school, and he asked me, you know, if I smoked or if I wanted to go out and have a, you know, smoke a joint or whatever, and I said, no, I get high on life. But by, you know, after my father died, a year later, I was full-blown drug addict, you know, and I was smoking and everything else. So I talk about drugs and alcohol because that's part of my life. That's part of, you know, where I came from, what happened to me. And so a little bit that's going to be in there every now and then. I'm going to say that. So, but, and all along I was smoking, you know. It just went along with the territory. If I was drinking, I was smoking. If I was other things, I was smoking. If I was smoking, I was drinking, you know, so on and so forth. So I'm skipping around here and there. I went to a trade school for 3 years for electronics. And I just barely made it through that. I was partying a lot. I was hooked up with the people within the, you know, that was doing drugs. So we'd do drugs and we smoke and party. And that was my life. That was my last two years of college or high school and into trade school. And then when I got out of there, I ended up getting a job because I went through there. I didn't get good grades, but I did graduate. And I lived with some friends that we were dealing out of the house and stuff like that. And luckily, I never really got popped for anything big. I got, you know, a couple things happened when I was in high school, but it was before I was 18 that I got off on. Pretty easily, my mom paid lawyers and everything went up and I got off. So by the time I was 27, I was full-blown addict in everything, you know, and I had come to the point where I got a job when I was 22, and at that, when I was at 27, I ended up getting fired from my job, and it made me wake up. And I admitted that I was an addict, and so I got help and ended up getting that job back. And that was in 1981, and got clean and sober at that time. And but I was still smoking. And I continue on smoking, and I ended up going back out after 15 years of sobriety and being clean. And I was back out for 15 years, or not 15, for 10 years. But I went a couple times. I went through treatment centers, and. But all this time I was smoking, you know, it just went along with it. There was 3 years when I got acquit with other people within the 12-step programs. Two other people, two close friends of mine that were married, we all decided to quit smoking together, and we did. I made it for 3 years, they made it for 2 years. And it worked because it was just like being in here. We had people to share with. We would share what was going on with us. We used the 12 steps, basically, to get through it. It worked for me, but I didn't keep... When they went back out, I didn't have anybody to really fall on. And in... At that time in the 12, you know, in the program, and everybody was smoking. Not everybody was smoking, but you could smoke in the meetings and on. And, you know, there wasn't very many meetings at that time. I mean, it was a there was more smoking meetings than there were non-smoking meetings, you know. But at any rate, you know, I didn't have people to share with anymore. So eventually, one day, a cigarette seemed good. They were smoking, you know, really American spirits, and they were a natural tobacco. And that's not going to hurt me, you know. You don't have all those other chemicals in there. So I tried one of those, and, you know, 2 weeks later, I'm smoking back to my Marlboros, my regular brand, and I'm smoking the Marlboro Reds and off and running again. So I was, but I had was smoked three for 3 years, you know. So what that tells me, even as I look back, is no matter how much time I got, it doesn't matter if I'm not showing up and sharing in meeting rooms what's going on with me and hearing what other people are going through and getting reminded about how it is as far as what it's like for the new person, you know, the first week or two, which I never want to have to go through again, you know. But it's great to hear that, even though they're struggling, that their struggle helps me to remember what it was like and to remind myself not to pick up again, because if I pick up again, I got to go through that again if I want to get clean or if I want to be smoker, you know. So it comes back to I need to keep coming to meetings, and that's I guess that's the message, you know. Keep showing up. So in 97, I went back out. Or it was 96 and a half, basically, somewhere in June. I think it was June of 96 I went back out. And it was as far as drinking. You know, I went back out, and it was on a hot summer day, and I thought, oh, one's not going to hurt. So I'm back out for 10 more years. In 2007, I came back in, and I got clean and sober, but I was still smoking. But I was, previous to that, I had tried to come into Nicotine Anonymous and tried to get in one of the times that I went through a program, I tried to, you know, I got a year here and then of clean sobriety and being clean. And at those times, I tried to quit smoking, but I'd come into Bonner a couple times and couldn't hang in there. So, but I got a period of a year. And another time I got a period of 3 months. So I knew it worked. You know, I knew that when I was ready to quit, this is where I had to come. I knew from my other programs that 12 steps were the answer to my problems. And that the higher power and the sharing and the love that are in the rooms, you know, just like the love that is in the other 12-step programs in the rooms there. And so in, I don't know where I need to go with that, but so in 2007, I got clean and sober. And I was working, and when I started work, I had about a year's smoker, but there was people there that worked that was smoking, and eventually I was coming to the meetings to get smoker at that time, which I worked out, but when I quit coming to the meetings, then the Nicodemus got his foot back in the door, so to say, and I picked up again. And, you know, that's another thing. Keep coming back to meetings. Keep showing up, no matter how much time you got. And so I picked back up then, and there was another time in there that I tried coming back and quitting. I worked at that place for 10 years. And so in the last year, there's been a lot of changes. And one, on the February 26th of 2019, I ended up driving myself to the emergency room, and that's, I got that written down. It says 2 a.m. on my way to emergency room, 2/26/19. And that was the last cigarette I had, was around 2 a.m. And so that's my sobriety date, or smobriety date. And so I'm on the, driving myself to emergency, smoking a cigarette, having a heart attack, basically. Well, I wasn't having a heart attack. My heart was out of rhythm. It was beating real fast. It had been that way for like 23 hours. And I went to work for half a day and came home, left work early, came home, was trying to meditate and relax and trying to get my heart to just settle down, and it never did. And by, you know, 1:30, 2 a.m. that morning, I figured, well, I better go to the hospital. And, you know, I was in not very good shape because my heart has been out of whack for all that time. So I drive myself at 2 a.m. into the emergency. And within 15 minutes of getting in the door, they had me back in the bag, laid out, saying, we're going to have to shock your heart to get you back, so your heart's beating at the right pace. And when they shocked me, my heart stopped, and they had to resuscitate me and pound on my chest and, you know, do the compressions on my chest to keep air or oxygen. And then they ended up shocking me again, and they ended up shocking me three times. So, but when I woke up the next morning, I was a smoker. And I woke up and I was free of all that hatred. And for the last 5 to 10 years, once I got smoker in 2007, and not smoker, but sober and clean in 2007, I knew that I wanted to be also smoker. I wanted to be nick free. And for those last 10 years, I struggled with it, really struggled. And I really hated myself for smoking, because I knew, you know, all from just the way I felt, I knew I was killing myself. And it wasn't just that. It was all the medical information that's out there about how, you know, it causes cancer. There's no denying it. It does. And so, you know, in our programs, it says, to thy own self be true. And, you know, how can I be true to myself, which means loving myself, doing things that is loving, you know, taking care of myself. And and so when I was smoking, I know I wasn't doing that. So every time I have a cigarette, I'd have shame, guilt, remorse, despair, because I didn't know how to stop. Not so much I didn't know how to stop, wasn't willing enough to do what was necessary to stop. And depression over it, and everything else, you know. And then on top of that, I got my son in here in think it was 2010, in 2010, I got him. And I needed to be there for him. He was 10 then, I think, when I got him. And I needed to, I was sole parent and bringing him up. And that's the whole reason that I really wanted to get clean and sober, was so that I could be there for him. So his life or him being in my life saved my life because I wanted to be there for him. And at any rate, so for those last 10 years, I really had a struggle with myself and the feelings that I was carrying with me. And every time I put out a cigarette, my thought was, I hope that's my last one, or maybe that's my last one, or maybe I won't have to smoke again. So the hope was that as I think we all have it, you know, that we somehow it's going to be an easy process of not picking up again, and you know that doesn't happen. The cravings are going to come no matter what, and we just have to learn how to live with them. That's the key. And the only way that I know how to do that is to be here in these rooms. And because I can't do it on my own. I am not talking about nicotine, the addiction being powerful, cunning, baffling, and patient. It will always be waiting for us. No matter how long, far we go down the line, if we don't keep that in check, and the only way that we can keep that in check, we have to live a spiritual life. And you know, that's a must. And we have to be, the how of it is the honesty, open-minded, and willing. You know, those are the three essentials. And all those things have to be present in my life. I can't, I have to be as honest as I can be, you know, with myself. And I like to say with other people too. But mainly with myself, you know. What I do today matters, you know, the choices I do. And for every decision I make, there's a reaction or action to that decision, you know. One way or the other, if I choose not to do my prayers in the morning, there's a better chance that I'm going to have a bad day. And if I take the time to meditate and do have prayers in the morning, the day is usually better because I'm bringing in a positive energy into my life. But today, that's my choice. When I was smoking, I didn't have that choice because the nicotine controlled my life, you know. And everything went around that, and the choices I didn't have. And since now that I'm clean, sober, and clean, I have the choice. My life is free for me to choose what I want. You know, I have writings all over my walls, you know, and I shouldn't say all over my walls. They're hanging on my desk, and one of them that I like that I posted up. Well, I'll go through a few of them. And this was the day that I came home from the hospital, and it says, "If only I could quit day one." You know, if only I could quit day one, and that's when I came into the room. And I still have that hanging, you know. And then it says, "I will trust in God today." And the next thing that I hung was, "Look for the lesson." And it says, "We consider accepting events of our day as lessons we can learn. An open mind receives. The lessons delivered to us today may be about either acceptance, courage, humility, compassion, or whatever issues we need to work on. Our higher power offers us opportunities to learn how to apply the 12 steps and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I think that's a slogan out of our slogans. And when I first read that, it was like, that stuck with me. That's like, you know, everything, every event that goes on in the day, good, bad, or whatever, I can learn from if I choose to. And it's my choice. And I have that choice. You know, I can let it go to the wayside, but I'll have to learn it again. It's going to happen again until it gets beaten to my head. And so I have a lot of other things posted too, that, but I won't go through them. Today, when I wake up, the first thing I do is, even before I get out of bed, when I wake my eyes open is if I don't have to get up and go to the restroom right away, it is, I'll say a prayer and ask God in and guide me and direct me through the day. And then I try to take the time, or hopefully have the time, to meditate a little bit at that time. And I try to come to a meeting, you know. And today I'm retired. I mean, that's another thing that happened over this past year after the, you know, the problems with the heart and that. You know, I went back to work after that, and I just... The work was just too much for me, and they were upset with me, I think, at work, and the main boss got attitude, and I cost them a lot of money as far as the insurance. They have insurance, but it's still, you know, it comes back to the insurance, you know, that they have to pay for the insurance, and which ups the insurance when you have a lot of people getting insurance. So anyways, but he let me know about it in one way or the other, and you know, he pretty much wanted me out of there, and I wanted out, so it worked out. And and I was happy to be, I'm happy to be retired today, that's for sure. It gives me a lot of freedom, and I was tired of waking up and going to work. And financially, I'm not rich, but I'm okay. I'm liking being retired. You know, I don't have the responsibilities like I did before, and that's always a wear. That's a wear and tear. You know, I don't know how not to be so wrapped up in work that I lose myself, but I that happens, you know, and it's just good to be free of that, you know. And so I'm so glad that I'm not smoking, and it doesn't take long for me to look into what I have to be grateful for me to get in a grateful spot or gratitude. It's just being able to wake up in the morning and not have to go out and smoke a cigarette. It's not having to go outside to have a cigarette in the cold and wet and snowy days. And it's not hacking and coughing and thinking I'm going to die. It's not being embarrassed about smoking. It's not having that. And that's what I don't ever want to forget, is feeling the shame, the remorse, the guilt, the despair, the bewilderment of smoking. And that was all there for me, you know. And it's there for me again if I pick up, you know. It's waiting. And I just don't want to ever forget what those feelings were about So I'm grateful that I don't have those feelings, that I'm free of that, you know, and that I'm, you know, I'm just sitting, I'm breathing. I haven't had the cough yet, you know, and that's a miracle, because before I couldn't go to a face-to-face meeting because I was too embarrassed about how much I would cough. I would go into a coughing episode and I'd just hack and hack and hack. And I couldn't share. I couldn't talk to people because I would be coughing, you know. And today, shit, I've gone on for too long and I haven't had the cough. So that in itself is a miracle. What's happening with me physically and is just unbelievable, you know. It's just, I've been through a lot of different things this year, and God's taken care of me. God is good, and He has brought me through it all, and if I would have, at the time that I got Smover, wrote down what I wanted to have in my life from my sobriety in a year. You know, what would you want from it? I would have sold myself short of what I've gotten. And because I'm more days than not, I'm happy, joyous, and free. You know, I'm grateful. And man, for the last 10 years of my smoking, I didn't have that. Even though I was sober and sober and clean, I still didn't have that gratitude, you know. I was still being held back. And I had to give up this last true addiction, chemical addiction anyways, to be free again. And I felt that freedom before in many, many years ago when I first came into the 12 steps. But I didn't realize how much nicotine was hurting me. And then once I realized it and couldn't quit, then I went into that spiral down depression. Like, I can't quit, you know. So I've shared way long enough, and I hope that you heard what you needed to hear. I don't know if I shared anything worthy of that, but I tried to turn it over to God the best that I could and let Him take it. And thanks so much for letting me do this. And thank you, Kenny. And thank all you people, because it's in all your shares that you touch me. And when I truly listen, and a lot of the time I am truly listening, what you say touches my heart, touches my soul, and it heals me. There's a healing in that when we touch each other, in that sense of what we have to offer ourselves, and my higher power speaks through you, and in that there's a healing process, that we are all the same. We are all, in many ways, the same. We all have different experiences, grew up in different families, but we all have that spirit within us, that spark of life that gives us life, you know. We all need air. We all need water, and where do those come from? And you know, we're all trying to get, I can't say it that way. I'm trying to get back to the place of being loved by myself, you know, accepted truly by myself. And it really doesn't matter what anybody else thinks or how they view me. If I love myself and I'm okay with who I am, both the good and the bad, not saying I don't want certain things to change. Yeah, I do. You know, I'm not perfect by any means. But I am who I am, I'm learning to love myself, you know, the yin and the yang, you know, it's all part of life. So I will stop with that. Thanks so much for letting me share, and God bless. Go ahead.